Unique New York. Unique New York.
Unique attack.
Unique attack. Attack. Not that unique, actually.
Hello, and welcome to Expected Own Goals. There be gold in those hills edition. I'm your host, Eric Morgan.
I'm Evan Davis. The U.S. is going to compete for a gold medal. Wow. How exciting.
If you decide to subscribe to our Patreon, you'll be able to hear about the much crazier game today between Spain and Brazil and our eventual opponent. Another gold-themed thing, a rematch of the Gold Cup.
I tweeted today, Marta will lead Brazil against the U.S. in the gold medal game at the Olympics. In other news, Barack Obama is preparing to accept the nomination for president at the Democratic National Convention. Also, I'm hearing some weird things about financial markets vis-a-vis Bear Stearns.
Marta already has 2 silver medals. Is that not correct?
Yeah, so 4 and 08. And she's played lost in 1 World Cup final in 2007. That is her tournament legacy.
Yikes.
Well, we'll get into all that on Patreon for the low price of $6 a month. You can get access to all of our bonus episodes, as well as our live watch-alongs. We will be doing the gold medal game on Saturday between the U.S. and Brazil. So you go ahead and sign up. Also, you can hang out in our Discord, which is the best thing. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I think it might be the best part about the Patreon so far, or about our subscription tier.
I've never seen a greater collective lamentation of the possibility of extra time than befell our Discord during the final 10 or so minutes before the inevitable U.S.-German extra time happened. Everyone who skipped out a little bit on work, or maybe just closed their monitor when their boss walked in, or whatever else they were doing, thank you for joining us on the Discord, and we really appreciate you being a member of our Deep Lying Playmaker community.
And if you sign up by Saturday, your price will be locked in forever, even as we add higher price subscription tiers in the future. So, but if you are a Deep Lying Playmaker member of our Patreon tier by, let's say, midnight Pacific, or 11:59 p.m. Pacific time on Saturday, August 10th, your price will remain $6 a month for all eternity.
You know what? Let's give them the whole weekend.
Ooh, by closing ceremony. The end of the closing ceremony.
By the end of the closing ceremony, they can remain Deep Lying Playmakers with us. Yeah, I think that's good. Also, if you're like 10 minutes behind it, just email us. at expectedowngoals@gmail.com. Look, we're not sticklers like this. That said, we will be closing the initial run, and we really want to thank all of you who've already signed up. Okay. Let's talk about USA Germany part 2. Was it better than part 1 for you, Evan?
No. Who would say yes?
Yeah, not a chance.
Who would say yes to that question?
Goals really help games, and boy, we had to wait for one.
Yeah. No, this was a tough watch. I think that the heat and the fatigue among everyone involved is what really drove the pretty poor performance here today. Loose touches, misplaced passes, basically from everybody but Naomi Girma at some point in the game. And even though the U.S. generally had the rub of the green, they were just kind of lame. They were lame today. I hesitate to hold it totally against them. I think that in the interest of preventing rust, they are throwing rest to the wolves, and this is the natural byproduct, and it's somehow still not coming back to haunt them, or to haunt Emma Hayes in terms of her lack of rotation or lack of earlier substitutions. It's a tough game. It's a tough game for everybody, I think.
We saw a different kind of breakable today. And that was quite literally physically breakable. That was tired legs. Frankly, the U.S. was fortunate that Germany also came into this game with 120 minutes already logged and a team that was carrying a handful of injuries.
Mm-hmm.
So, in some ways, this was a fair match.
That might have been what made the difference. That it's Nicole Anyomi at the top of the formation rather than the Schuler. And Nicole Anyomi basically did fuck all day. Like, if there was anything happening in Germany's attack, it was coming through Jule Brandt, who was once again, slightly surprisingly, but perhaps as driven by the injuries to both Alexandra Popp and Lea Schüler, playing really centrally again and trying to trying to attack central areas where maybe using Sam Coffey as a single pivot could open up pockets. Was it that successful? Not really. But if there was any place where the U.S. did look a little bit nervy in defense, it was in and around that area. And then the back line just put in an incredible shift again.
Moreover, no Alexandra Popp even played out of position.
Yeah.
That limits the danger of a lot of the crosses that Germany served in. Mm-hmm. They really, really struggled to get on the end of their primary attacking source to cause problems until the very, very end of this game, at which, you know, which we will get to. But I think for me, and I said it on the Discord, and I know it's something that you and I have talked about a fair amount, this, again, felt like a pretty prototypical Emma Hayes tight knockout game. The exchange of a incredibly solid defense for a less than glittering attack was the trade-off that Emma Hayes was happy to make. The U.S. controlled the game without ever looking particularly dangerous, which I think as a fan is really frustrating to watch. But when you think about it from the flip side, Germany created so little in regulation.
I've been thinking a lot about the 1966 Men's World Cup recently.
Oh, why would you do that? Go on.
Because
speaking of unfortunate German losses,
Jonathan Wilson, who's the author of Inverting the Pyramid, which is the it's the tactics Bible, it's the modern tactics Bible, I think, just an incredible piece of intellectual history about how tactics were innovated over 150 years of football. But in his chapter about Alf Ramsey and the 1966 England men's team, he talked about how in the early stages of that tournament, the local England fans were furious with Ramsey because they thought that they were not playing high-flying, attacking football. Apparently, one of the chants in the stadiums during those games was, "We want goals, we want goals." And Ramsey was like, "No, I want to play a controlled, highly positionally disciplined form of football until we get to the stage where we can kind of let our guns loose." And in the 58 years since that tournament's conclusion, a lot of that has been sanded away from the pages of history. And all people remember is kind of the like special attacking flair that England had at certain points in the knockout stage of that World Cup. But what Ramsey was primarily interested in was using set positional structure to try and control areas of the field and not give your opponents any room to move. And Hayes, in her own way, is sort of carrying on that intellectual tradition. And Ramsey, you know, there were managers before Ramsey, although not very many of them, who thought about the game in this way. Lots of managers after him who thought about the game in this way. And I think that Hayes is sort of representing that philosophy of like how football games are won. And interestingly enough, from the data that is available to us, albeit it's a very limited slice of data that could at some point be collected about soccer games, tells us that playing defense-first football in a knockout tournament like this is how you get to the final. And it's often shitty to watch. It's often not a lot of fun. And today was really not a lot of fun because even when players were trying to create and trying to progress the ball through the thirds, they were just too tired and it was too hot. And today was the first game where the sun was out and the heat was at such a level that combined with exposure to the sun in those first 20 or 30 minutes could not have made anything any easier. And so it just became a slog from both sides. And
I think that built into the U.S. game plan was the possibility of extreme fatigue.
Yeah.
And a little bit less so than the Germans baked it in, because for the vast majority of the game, of the first 90 minutes of the game, the Germans really generated nothing as far as viable attacking chances. And again, as was the case in the Japan game, I think Emma Hayes is perfectly happy, a la Alf Ramsey, though I think it is very unfair to compare her to Alf Ramsey, because Alf Ramsey lives in a darker place in the soul of a football fan than Emma Hayes deserves to be lumped into. That said, Emma Hayes likes playing on the margins with the better team. She has the talent advantage, and she is willing to make sure that that talent advantage tilts toward denying good chances for her opposition, as opposed to exerting and expressing that through vibrancy of attack.
Before Sophia Smith scored the goal, Germany had generated 0.04 XG per shot.
Yeah, awful.
That's nothing. That's dog shit. As much as Jule Brand could make them feel uncomfortable in areas of the attacking third just outside the box, it didn't matter. It just didn't matter, because Naomi Girma, I think I might throw my hat in the ring right now and say I think she's the best center back in the world.
I mean, you saw the Emma Hayes post-game quote,
yeah.
Did you not?
Yeah, please read it verbatim.
Emma Hayes on Naomi Girma. Look, she's the best defender I've ever seen.
And who are we to say she's wrong?
Yeah, and on the back of today's performance and this whole tournament, I want to say I'm inclined to maybe not all the way agree, but say, boy, she's in a really, really select pool at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's Leah Williamson, it's Wendy Renard, it's Irene Paredes, although after her performance today against Brazil, maybe we take her off that list. It's Mapi Leon.
No, and, Evan, that's against the spirit of this podcast.
Yeah.
One bad game does
no,
not
I know,
a career
I know,
define.
I know, fucking yeah. around. It's those three plus Girma, and maybe you throw in Vanessa Gil or Kadisha Buchanan, but I'm not even sure I'm convinced that they belong in this class. But it's Girma is on a very, very, very short list about who the best center back in the world is at this moment in time. And again, I'm looking at her heat map from today right now, not as extreme as it was against Japan, because it just could not have been based on what kind of game was played, but it is still outrageous how much ground she covers. Once again, 18.2 touches per dispossession, which is a stat I've cited from another game that she's had in this tournament. You're going to love this. Girma made, she made 13 loose ball recoveries in areas where she was covering ground, like her zones of responsibility. Do you want to know how much the entire German team recovered the ball in those areas for the entire game? 12.
Wow. Okay. That's the entire German team.
That's the entire German team. Girma made one more recovery by herself in the defensive and parts of the middle third than Germany, who are in attack and trying to win the ball in a good area, could do.
Again, it passed the eye test. When in this game was Naomi Girma not in the right place at the right time, whether it be with a stray leg to clear a cutback pass? Oh, Naomi's going to have nightmares to to bully or box out a German attacker to end what feeble attack may have been. Naomi Girma, we joked about it on the Discord. We might as well just have renamed the U.S. Women National Team Discord Naomi Girma and Friends, or somebody suggested the name the Naomi Girma Blanket Company. I think that is the effect. The numbers bear it out. The eye test bears it out. There are some times that a player puts in a performance or a series of performance where you just go, this is an undeniably legendary run. And Naomi Girma is offering that to us right now.
If you take out Lara Freigang's chance that turns into the Elissenaire jump kick save at the end of the game, if you take that out and look at the entire game, all 120 minutes of it, or 120 plus minutes of it, 0.05 XG per shot from Germany. Mm-hmm. So forget even controlling for game state by only looking at what happened before Sophia Smith's goal. You just take out that freak chance from Freigang at the end, and that's how much per shot chance quality Germany was able to muster. And it's not all Girma. I mean, Emily Fox had a very good game. Emily Sonnet had a great game.
Fox, other than keeping Freigang in the 119th minute, and you know what? I'm willing to I'm willing to forgive that
one. Yeah, that's really where everybody's burned out. It's just like it's just unreal. And that all those center backs I just cited, they have not, for club or country, over the past year, done what Girma has been doing for the last 12 days. And just because it's a small sample size, it doesn't mean it ain't real. And for a player like her, I would put what little money I have in my bank account to say that this is real. This is just who she is. And this is an important point. Adapting players to fit your style, finding the players, or adapting a style for the players. The way that we framed a lot of the Emma Hayes era has been around what kind of tactical ideas she wants to implement inside the team. But it is very important to remember that this tactical system does not work unless you have a player like Naomi Girma in it. And would Hayes have tried to develop this particular version of control and rest defense if she did not have a center back of Girma's quality sitting in the middle of the line?
I'm inclined to say she would have tried it.
Yeah, but
it would not be coming off as well.
Yeah, like at this, a level of defensive success from the U.S. has as much to do with Girma being able to fit the style like a glove as opposed to the style forcing players to fit it.
This was the first performance, I believe, where an opponent of the U.S. generated a single XG in a game.
Yeah, I think that's right. And that's, again, predominantly and coming in extra time. And
nobody's done it. Nobody's done it in regulation.
Yeah, exactly. It came almost entirely after the Smith goal in just those 28 minutes, including stoppage time. That is how special this defensive core is. And a special shout out to Emily Sonnet, who managed to put up almost as many on-ball defensive actions as Girma did, but with fewer minutes on the field.
Yeah.
They're just shut down, and they remain shut down. It's hard to imagine how anything changes about that. And when things aren't clicking in other areas, keeping the ball out of the net means, at worst, you got a 50% shot at winning the game.
The U.S. has not looked at any point particularly at risk of losing this tournament or being bounced from this tournament. That is something that Spain couldn't have said before today and now definitely can't say as they have been bounced from this tournament. That is not something any other team in this tournament could have said.
Yeah.
It is, we are a handful of games, not yet 10 games into the Emma Hayes era. And I don't know what more you could be asking. And yet, when we watch games, there is this condescension sometimes coming from the booth about what the U.S. should be doing more of.
Mm-hmm.
This is as well as the U.S. has played at a tournament in quite some time against really excellent opposition.
Yeah.
Are you not entertained? Are you not thrilled? Fine. Some of these games these knockout games have taken a while to get to a goal.
And listen, like, Spain has generated the most non-penalty XG per 90 minutes in the tournament at 2.1. The U.S. is at 2.0. So yeah. Whatever consternation you have, and you know who you are about the U.S.'s attacking capabilities, they're still better at this than anybody else over the last couple of weeks. And the one team who was basically tied with them is playing for a bronze medal, not a gold medal.
Correct.
So this is like...
And just allowed not a soft four into their net. They allowed...
not a soft four at all.
a heinous four. And frankly, Spain saw what it was to not have a Naomi Girma in these last two games.
And on an XG per shot level, like, U.S. is at 0.12 and Spain's at 0.09. So...
Yep.
So, you know, the U.S. is doing its job in attack. Emma Hayes apparently told the players afterwards that she was going to send them into the pain cave for this game. And now they have been pulled out of the pain cave now that the game is over. And I think that's just how the cookie crumbles, I think.
I think we agree that this 4-3-3, 3-4-3, single pivot base midfield, whatever you want to call it, however you want to view that Crystal Dunn position, that asymmetrical attack. Mm. This in offense back three
mm-hmm.
has been excellent. Dunn has also been excellent. She was listed as a forward coming into this tournament. That was a lie, but fully has deserved her spot on this team. And for long stretches has offered dynamism in attack. I continue to be shocked by how her 5'1" frame is able to bully much taller, much more powerful attackers yeah. to position herself to not just like win fouls, but to win the ball and to turn it into attack mm-hmm. quickly. This defense is going great. We're not going to see any changes going into the final, barring some sort of injury. I say that acknowledging that I think Tierna Davidson is maybe not going to start because of the knock she took. I suspect we're going to see, I mean, Sonnet would have fully earned her spot even if Davidson can go, but we'll see one of the two of them, probably both of them, in the final mm. in some combination. But Fox, Dunn, and Girma are in ink for that final.
Oh, sure. Yeah. No question.
So the midfield.
Yeah. I mean, I think Horan really jumped out to me today. She just looked so wiped. And to be fair, when she got pulled at the start of extra time, that was the first time that she had not been on the field for the U.S. since the 65th minute of the Zambia game 2 weeks ago. Yeah. She among, I mean, everybody's been playing a lot, but Horan in particular has been playing a lot, and the way that Horan plays also requires a vast exertion of energy. But man, she had a tough game. She was 4-for-10 on attempted passes and dribbles either into or within the final third. 40% mm-hmm. 40% completion rate. Coffey was 9-for-11. Lavelle was 7-for-9 on those types of attempts. So her attacking edge was quite blunted. And then the four shots that she put up only came out to like 0.04 XG per shot. Like, and she, so much of her side-to-side movement and like finding pockets on either the inside left or the inside right, the way that she's been doing, playing as that freer eight or that extra double 10 who can kind of roam or mm-hmm. take the place where Lavelle is not, did not click in the way that it has when it's looked good in the past. But I think that's just because she's so fucking tired. She's so tired.
We have in the past talked about the problem of Lindsey Horan, which is to say the problem of a very elite world-class player whose tactical demands when deployed can stretch a team out of its comfort zone if the team is not built exactly around what she does well. Today, I don't think a lot of that applies. I think she played slightly more within herself than she did in the first match against Germany.
Yeah.
You saw that with Germany's sort of blunted attack coming through the middle. She was fine in that way, but yes, she's just like kind of dead on her feet.
And I think they knew it because I can't remember exactly at what point in the first half, if it was at like in the 20th minute or the 30th, in that area, you saw Horan drop into a double pivot with Coffey. I think to try and just open up different passing combination possibilities, and B, to just give some measure of solidity to prevent Pran from running around. But even then, Horan did not, that didn't really stabilize Horan's performance, I don't think. She only made 7 on-ball defensive actions today, and all of them were loose ball recoveries. She didn't make an interception. She didn't go in for a tackle. It was all ground or aerial duels to win loose balls. And for a number 8, even an attack-minded number 8/number 10, that's dicey. You can't survive on it, especially when you're only putting up 4 out of 10, you know, vertical progressions into or within the final third, you know?
Yeah, I'm willing to chalk this performance up to exhaustion. Yeah, yeah.
No, of course it is.
But I do think moving forward, this tournament has raised the very real question of not if, but when Naomi Girma takes the captain armband from Lindsey Horan, because Lindsey Horan is not an in-ink starter and Naomi Girma is an in blood starter.
I think it's going to be a while. I think there's...
I feel that conversation has begun at this tournament.
Not inside U.S. soccer or inside the camp.
No. I think if we are analyzing like what this team looks like going forward, it would be prudent for the U.S. to start considering when that transition occurs.
Mm-hmm.
Naomi Girma is entering her prime. Lindsey Horan is exiting her prime. And Lindsey Horan's performances throughout this tournament haven't necessarily justified her in-ink starter status. It is only due to a series of injuries and a lack of depth in this team that I think Lindsey Horan holds this spot. I don't think she's played herself into this starting spot, per se.
This is the scenario I envision, is that the political leverage that Horan has behind the scenes, because she does sort of, in a way, represent the last vestige of the old generation, and specifically the old structure of U.S. Women's National Team, having come into the team in, 2015, at the end of 2015 or 2016, and being a core member of 2016 Olympics, the 2019 World Cup, the 2021 Olympics, the 2023 World Cup, and spending the majority of her U.S. national team career as a paid, centralized, salaried player for them and not for her club. Like, basically everybody else is either too young for that to really be a concern, or for it to have like fully shaped their mentality, or they've never played for the U.S. women's national team under those circumstances. And with Alex Morgan gone, with Megan Rapinoe gone, with Lynn Williams as a person who is in and out of the side a lot, so she never has that sense of being like, this is my job, being a national team player.
She lacks the clout. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like it's Horan and it's Alyssa Nair. Those are the last vestiges of that model. And I wonder if there is potentially how Emma Hayes is going to handle that. And like, does she see Horan as essential, and can Horan use that to her advantage? And does she then kind of push herself for the next cycle to still be the midfield engine? Or does Emma Hayes' pet project, Corbin Albert, be so strong? Does Hayes have such strong feelings about that she can use that to center Albert more and start moving Horan into offstage for over the next couple of years? We don't know the answer to any of those questions, but it is worth pondering. Horan still, I think, in the minds of both her teammates and maybe even in Hayes, if I were to guess, still feels undroppable and very much the captain of the squad. I understand why you're raising these questions because of the tournament that she's had. I'm just talking about like how the politics and the mentality of that culture operates, and she is that.
you're talking about the toxic part of this that potentially.
I don't even necessarily want to call it toxic.
The human part.
Yeah,
of this.
Yeah. It's not really toxic. It's just that like there was a time when this is how players made their money, and so they. There were only 30 jobs, and so you had to hold on to one if you wanted to keep going. So it's hard to kind of wrap your mind around different ways of doing things. Now, you'd think Horan would be more adaptable to that because she's played in Europe for so long, and so maybe she doesn't have that psychological block. But it is worth noting that she and Nair are the two last towering figures of the old ways.
Yeah, Crystal Dunn cuts a different figure in this story.
Yeah. Yeah, yes, it's good to bring her up because she is part of that too. I mean, she's been on the team for 8 years, so.
But Horan has always played this sort of talismanic and very visible role. Crystal Dunn, frankly, playing wing back, fullback, and a lot of the ways in which she plays other positions when deployed there, it's just more graft. It just doesn't it lacks the sort of star oomph.
It's a good point.
The way that fullbacks, as Liverpool left back Andy Robertson wrote in a letter to a boy in a hospital who asked him for a signed jersey. Here, I've sent you a Roberto Firmino signed jersey. Nobody wants a left back's jersey.
But Dunn is very much like an off-screen leader, and Horan pulls focus. So you're right to nuance it there, yeah.
Correct. I was going to agree with your take on this. I think that I am encouraged by the way in which Emma Hayes dispatched Alex Morgan, that should Horan see a decline that is something similar or similar to Alex Morgan's, that Emma Hayes is happy to make that
decision. I think it's going to be a long time coming.
But we're a single year away from Alex Morgan becoming a co-captain. Last summer, Alex Morgan was quite entrenched. And this summer, she's not at the Olympics. I think that we are entering a period where things move a little faster. And generally speaking, I think that's for the best. Is the difference, however, between Morgan, and maybe this is the right transition to take us to the forward line, the difference between Morgan and Horan is that there is no clear next after Horan. Corbin Albert offers you absolutely nothing in the way Lindsay Horan goes forward. I think you're looking at a Jaden Shaw who has not really cracked the pitch in this tournament, some out of injury, but some out of, I don't know, maybe just a lack of trust, is closer to being converted to a Lindsay Horan type than Corbin Albert ever will be. But it seems like Shaw has yet to earn that favor. Rose Lavelle is not dependable enough to sort of take over the swashbuckling Lindsay Horan role, though her work rate in this tournament has been exceptional. I think that Horan's lack of a clear usurper is the thing that stabilizes her position. But we're 3 years away from a World Cup, and those are three often... Yeah, I mean, Lindsay Horan has so many miles on her legs at this point. She started at such a young age playing full professional seasons. I wonder if we won't start seeing, more generally, age curves coming down and peaks being less long in the women's game as just more people play these long professional club seasons. But also, yeah, Horan has as many miles for a person her age as you can pretty much put on that body.
Yeah.
Given the workload she selected for herself. It's just a thing that's worth flagging out there. I thought Horan was fine. I thought Sam Coffey did a lot of covering for Lindsay Horan, which, frankly, as a teammate, is no less than she should have done, having a suspension and forced rest on her.
Absolutely.
I thought that Sam Coffey had a really productive game.
She had a lot to do with the way that Jugland was deployed. So there's that to be... I mean, she only made 11 only, actually. I mean, for a number six, 11 on-ball defensive actions is quite good. By the time you listen to this, we will have access to FIFA's tracking data report, so we can actually see just how much off-ball pressuring she was doing and how much she was preventing balls from coming into her area in the first place. Unfortunately, we can't talk about that just yet, but Orst Rubesch was clearly building his team to attack those areas. Because I'm sure he saw, single pivot, even with Coffey back, that is a potential area of weakness. Also, I need to cover for injured players. Maybe we can test some things and make Zone 14 our playground. And in as much as Germany did anything in attack, it was there. That's not really like to say anything ill of Coffey.
No, Coffey, 53 for 60 passes, 88% good. A key pass, great.
As I said, 9 for 11 on vertical pass attempts into or within the final third. As a number six, that's great.
And won 8 out of her 9 ground goals.
Yeah, no, she put in a shift.
She put in a really, really good... She put in a Sam Coffey shift. And we also saw, for periods, the stark difference between what Corbin Albert is.
You made the great point is that like the main difference is the moment Coffey gets her foot on the ball... Her head's already up and she's looking for the passing lanes instantly. And yeah. And Albert doesn't do that.
I think in another life, Sam Coffey is like a Hall of Fame NFL quarterback.
Well, such it's also it's important to remember that yeah. she was trained as a number 10. She was developed as a number 10, and it's only yes. through her monomaniacal desire to be the best possible player she can be relative to whatever is asked of her that she taught herself how to defend. Not taught herself, but like she fully committed to becoming a defensive player and learning how to create passing quality from deeper parts of the field. But her natural instincts is to pull strings and unlock defenses and break lines.
This is a common thing that happens with attackers over the course of their career when they sort of, when their athleticism peaks out before the highest level of the game, they end up moving further back in the field. But Sam Coffey has all the traits of a striker who expects the ball to be taken off of her foot immediately upon receiving it. Her first touch is excellent. She is always receiving it into space that she can shield, and she's got her head up looking for the next thing. And the U.S. benefits from the misfortune of Sam Coffey's dreams of being a striker turning into a number six. She went from being a very good college striker to being an absolutely world-class, possibly the best six in the world, and had a game kind of like that. She's certainly in the conversation. In the way that Girma more demonstrably has put her claim to being the best center back in the world, Sam Coffey has in this tournament reinforced the reasons we think she's excellent. And I think was a big part of what worked for the U.S. So let's transition to the forward line. The other part of what I think, how Emma Hayes can get away with her winning at the margins, largely defensive system, is the individual brilliance and interplay brilliance of Snap, Crackle, Pop, the Trident, whatever we want to call them.
Yeah, Chili Fatty's got to let it go that they don't like her nicknames. Attackers, by the way.
No, they don't. It's fine. Julie, just take the L on this one. It's fine. Honestly, you were in there, you pitched, it's fine. You just didn't win. That said, I don't think anything, as much as Emma Hayes's defensive strategy may or may not work without a Naomi Girma, this entire game plan doesn't work without Smith, Rodman, and Swanson, because they are so responsible for everything that happens in attack and for finding goals. And we've seen it. They've scored nine of the 11 goals in this tournament have been theirs.
Yeah, 9 of the 11, and then they've been involved in some way or shape or form in 10 of the 11. Yes, individual correct. Brilliance, but also I don't think it can be ignored just how well-drilled and well-planned a lot of their off-ball movement and their attacking combinations are. It's not like they, it's get it to them and they'll figure it out. To a certain extent, it is, especially when they're trying to face up 1v1. But a lot of times, the decision of like who comes short, who pushes on, who pulls wide, who fills in the center, how do you like play one touch, then move on to receive the next pass? That's tactics. And that's stuff that they're working with Hayes on, drawing up X's and O's on the chalkboard. To figure out. And Hayes is the attacking tactics specialist. Denise Reddy runs the defense, Hayes runs the attack. And
they, particularly Smith and
that relationship
Swanson
is turning into something pretty constant, incredible.
Yeah. A few weeks back when we were talking about the friendlies leading up to this, I had talked about how I was concerned that Smith and Swanson were sort of 5 yards off of each other, a little too far apart. Is sort of in crucial moments. They have ironed that out and studied the tape, and their interplay and interchanging their movement has been nothing short of the stuff of nightmares for defenders. Eggering and Heindrich just had a horror show of another game in terms of what they were dealing with. And frankly, they played great bend don't break defense for long stretches, but they were being run ragged by that tandem. And then Trinity Rodman, who on the right is doing more deep tracking and less interplay with the two of them, is the single most devastating dribbler and crosser and hugging the touchline winger, the true winger of this set, and offering you something completely different down the side. And frankly, were it not for the fact that the Germans found themselves in positions that they needed to block crosses or cutbacks, this game could have gone differently if one or two of those from Rogan gets through. Because everybody was
actually
in the right place.
Swanson and Smith both were playing very centrally for a lot of the game. They were, if they were taking up wide positions at all, it wasn't necessarily to receive or even to drive into wide, you know, through the inside channel or in the half space and then cut in. They were just both ready to move centrally and see if they could attack those center backs. I mean, that was the obvious weakness of the German back line. I think that was very deliberate. And I'm bringing this all up just to bounce off your idea about getting the spacing right. I think if someone looked at the pass network, they would think, wow, that's a little bit of bunch ball there. Why are they kind of sitting on top of each other? And I think what it really is having Swanson, when one of them gets on the ball, having Swanson withdraw and be something that Hegering and Hendrick both have to think about and not just have like a 2v1 or 1v2 with Smith gave them fits because they don't have the pace and they did not seem to have the tactical discipline to handle that kind of energy. So like, why bother going wide when you know that this is just a major, major weak point of how Germany defends?
This is an imperfect term, but you hear it from time to time. It is what the decoy runs are doing to drag defenders out of position to create space for other people. And Smith and Swanson are both really selfless when it comes to those kinds of runs, in the way that Rodman is very selfless in the way she goes back. Every great attacker has, on some level, an ego, and also needs to have, like, a goldfish brain. You can't remember your misses, and you need to believe you are going to score. All three of them have that in spades. It's just how it represents itself with three of them. You almost never get a situation when those three attackers with those three personalities also will just put in the work defensively.
Busted or ACL, it was obvious that this was going to have to be the front three in order for the U.S. to find success at the tournament. And I think that Hayes, in all of her, you know, psychologist's wisdom, recognized that and realized in order for this to work the way that she wanted it to work, she had to ensure that those three were going to be basically like sisters on the field. I can't really think of another way to put it. And you can even see that in the way that they are marketing themselves or kind of branding themselves on social media lately. Like, it's always the three of them together. And I don't think that's an accident.
There are other times, you know, when teams have been able to express it in this way, but the U.S. is doing, this is just a really special team, and I hope everybody's appreciating that.
I don't think they are. I also can't really blame them, because the last couple of games have been tough to watch. They have. Even though you and I don't necessarily want to like tar and feather Hayes or the players for that necessarily, we see the context around it. Like, they're tough watches. But at the same time, guys, the one thing that isn't a tough watch is like when one of those three players or all three of them get into space and can do what they do together. I mean, that's how the goal comes to pass. It's Coffey to Swanson to Smith. Bing, bang, boom.
I want to get at both the good and the bad of this really quickly. Mallory Swanson was caught offside twice in the second half. Mm-hmm. Two opportunities that could have turned into huge chances for the U.S. That looked like fatigue.
Yeah.
That extra yard that she didn't get back to get onside, that desire to go a step early because you just don't know if you have the legs, that looked like her playing leggy. It is not a surprise to me that she ended up being the distributor of the goal and not the receiver of the goal, because she was tired and started conserving her energy. Mm-hmm. She had these 5-minute bursts where she looked really on it, and then she would become a bit more absent for periods of the game. Mm-hmm. That's just really, really good on the part of Swanson. Management of being right at the edge of what you can physically do.
Right.
Swanson knew she wasn't coming out, especially knew she wasn't coming out when Lynn Williams came to get Rose Lavelle knew that she was going to have to stick this for a while, if not the whole way. And she had to go to 110, which, you know, we're talking about a player who's not that far removed from a pretty critical injury. That was a hard shift. She's been doing a lot of hard shifts. That said, she kept herself in the game enough to create the Smith chance. And Sophia Smith, like a panther, had just sort of been lying in wait for an opportunity all game and absolutely pounced.
Well, the goal, and I mean, what she's doing off the ball is so incredible because, so, yeah. You know, Coffey threads it to Swanson. Swanson takes one look, throws that diagonal across into the box. And Smith, with Feli Rauch right on her, is able to deke Rauch left as though she's going to try and go inside.
It's a swim move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then immediately, because she's got such incredible control and balance, switches the other way, but it's too late, and Rauch is wrong-sided, and now she's on the outside of the fullback. Rauch is now nowhere near the ball because the ball is running across both players. So if Rauch can... Mm-hmm. stay in position, he has the potential to win the ball. But because Smith makes that one little move, and she doesn't lose control, all of a sudden Rauch is out of the picture. And it's still a low XG chance. It's a 0.05 XG chance, but that kind of striker's quality is what even allows for a shot to be possible in the first place. It's the same thing with the way that Rodman got her goal against Japan in the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
You know?
We've talked about this before, that in these very tight games, sometimes you just need players who have that extra element of skill that allows them to separate and just go out and get you wins. And in this knockout stage, we've seen Trinity Rodman, it's a low XG chance, but have it in the tank to just find a way to go out and get a win. It doesn't always come off. This Smith chance is less fluky. It shouldn't exist. Feli Rauch will watch this video back and wonder what happened over and over again. It seems like she's so concerned with this threat of Smith that she loses track of the ball and what she should be paying attention to. Mm. And frankly, I think Ann-Katrin Berger reads that, and it explains why she is out of the goal.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think Berger got caught in no man's land, and I was thinking a fair amount of it because we were talking about it on the Discord and like hate to see goalie howlers. I don't think that was a howler. I think it was a classic there are no good choices situation. Mm. My last defender is about to get beat by one of the three or five best strikers in the world. And once that defender is beat, I can either have closed down that shot or I can be lying in wait in goal with no help coming. And Berger is faced with just a horrific, that's a real terrible choice. And she makes a call. Smith reads that too.
Yeah.
And shoots before Berger can even get
and
set.
If Opta took keeper positioning into account in XG model, that chance is probably tagged for a higher value. Since we're talking about goalkeepers, let's go to the end of the game when the US is now dropped into a 5-4-1 and is really being laid siege to, and I don't think there's really anything critical to hit them with, because at that point you're so wiped. And now all of a sudden you got to start making fucking shuttle runs. Are you fucking kidding me? But I think in general, Lissonnaire had a pretty good game, and it wasn't just the jump kick save. Like when she was coming out to claim balls, her decision-making on coming out to punch balls was all quite sound and tidy. I mean, she wasn't being challenged a lot, but the moments where we've sometimes seen her like flap at the ball or just miss it altogether or just do things that if something is scored becomes a nightmare. I didn't see a lot of that today. And maybe that's just one game, but she, I thought, played really well. And then the jump kick save prevents this from going to penalties.
Yeah, she had one corner kick early in the game where she sort of fanned on the ball a little bit and it didn't quite go. And I was like, oh boy, what are we in for? The thing with Alyssa Nair is, it's the inconsistency that we've been concerned about.
Absolutely.
She had a vintage Alyssa Nair game today, and what that is a very good goalkeeper.
Yeah.
I felt like she was in a good place when she saved a low shot across the goal and cushioned the ball off her glove basically into Crystal Dunn's path when she was giving up the rebound. I think she knew where Dunn was, and the rebound was played to total safety, but also allowed Dunn to sort of turn and begin a counter.
Sure.
I was like, oh, that is really, really nice from Nair. And sort of from there on, she didn't put a foot wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I want to give Ann-Katrin Berger a lot of credit, because after she concedes that goal, she stops a 0.28 chance from Sophia Smith that's dead red on a break, where she comes out, gets big, gets low, and kicks the ball to safety
and
real quickly.
It looks like it could be a repeat of the goal, but she reads it right this time.
Yeah, it's actually an even more dangerous situation because Smith is in clear.
Mm-hmm.
And Berger basically has to time her steps right, which are about Smith's strides. And Smith tries to fire quickly, and Berger is down with the kick save. It would have required a pretty extraordinary strike from Smith to have gotten that passed. And let's just talk about that 119th, 120th minute sequence, because Berger makes arguably an even better save at the other end to keep whatever feeble chance Germany still has alive and keeps this game 1-0. So the Freigang header, second phase of a free kick. In that second phase, Emily Fox is keeping 3-4 German attackers onside. Fine. It's hard to read that rebound. These things happen. The looping ball to Freigang is perfection. Alyssa Nair can't get there in time. All she has at her disposal is the ability to shut down the angle. I don't know how many goalkeeping coaches would approve of that jump kick save.
Yeah.
But who cares?
Yeah.
It worked.
Yeah.
She made herself real big.
And timed the jump to make sure that Freigang can't read it early and shoot under her.
And it works. And she bails out Emily Fox and validates essentially 119 minutes of tough defense the U.S. had just put in. Mm-hmm. She shows up real big at the most important moment.
Yeah.
It's really impressive.
So the U.S. now has an extra day of rest than they've had all tournament since they're playing in the gold medal game. They got to travel back to Paris, but because of the extra day of rest, that's mitigated a little bit more.
Whatever advantage you want to give the U.S., it's going to come out in the wash on this one. But yes, the U.S. get an extra day of rest to play a team they are quite familiar with.
So what do you think? We're going to talk about Brazil and Spain in great detail, but like right now, let's remain cursory. What do you think about the gold medal game and the bronze medal game? I mean,
I'll say this about the bronze medal game. Poor Germany, because this Spain team had a real wobble.
I wouldn't call it a wobble. I'd call it a full-on, like, you know, nose-first dive of an a 747.
Yeah, they kissed the concrete in the empty pool from the diving board.
Yeah.
No, that was bad.
It's probably the worst that they've played in years, honestly.
It was stunning. That said, Germany do not have the legs to press Spain.
And they don't get the extra day of rest because they play on Friday.
If Oberdorf were here, maybe it'd be closer. I just think Spain's got the talent advantage here. I think it's frankly pretty strange that Spain isn't in this final. It obviously has happened. Yeah. I think Spain are taking that bronze medal. In the gold medal game, I don't know, man. Everything says the U.S. has played as well as one could hope throughout the tournament and have really been on the path toward at least getting to this game.
Yeah.
But they're up against a team that is so deeply unpredictable at this point.
Both from their head coach throwing out the lineups and with the kind of performance they turn in. I mean, my God, like, this is So,
I just imagine Elias with, like, you know, like, lotto numbers with names on them, just, like, coming up a two.
Yeah, I mean, the center backs were, the center backs, his hand was kind of forced because Raffaele was hurt. But, like, here's the thing. Somebody once told me that the way you beat Barcelona is either through a hyper-aggressive counter-press or a nine-behind-the-ball, hyper-dense low block. Brazil attempted to play deep and organized against Spain in the group stage. They weren't very good at it, and they were soundly defeated. Then they turn around and in the semifinal just launched a counter-press that Spain did not know what to do with and made them look completely foolish. They were not given time to play out of the back, and they were, if able to get the ball into the attacking half, had their defense pushed up way too high, and the Brazilians were prepared to hit them on the counter, and they deserved to get their asses kicked. I don't know that Brazil is going to have that kind of space to work with against the U.S. If they try to go aggressive high pressure, okay, you're intriguing me because of the like tempo that the U.S. back line has been playing in possession. Maybe there's holes, but and it's hard to say that, like, well, the U.S.'s defenders are better when trying to pass forward than Spain's defenders. That's obviously not true. So can the Brazil repeat a performance that we have not seen from them yet until that semifinal? And by the way, did not see from them in the Gold Cup either, albeit the team was in a very different place back in February and March than they are now. But can they do it twice? Because that's sort of how I think you're going to have to beat the U.S. is to make Girma, Fox, Sonnet, or Davidson and Dunn sweat early when they get their foot on the ball in the defensive third.
Yeah, I don't. I think this Brazil team is very fortunate to be here despite a good game plan to beat Spain.
Mm.
And I think
they were under siege at the end of that thing too. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the U.S. have to be heavy favorites going into this final. Obviously, Brazil has pulled two surprises in a row against their group stage. Have the underlying aspects of their performance suggested this level of quality? In some places, yes. In other places, absolutely not.
Yeah.
In the same way everyone was worried about Brazil going into that Gold Cup final and then the U.S. trounced them, I think the U.S. holds a similar advantage with a different perspective going into this game. I think the U.S. win this.
I think even despite the slower tempo of their buildup, the U.S. has not been as naive on the ball at the back than Spain was in the first 70 minutes against Colombia and the entire game against Brazil. I have not seen that from the U.S. defense yet. So I think that is going to work to their benefit. But also, no team has really tried to aggressively press, I don't think. I'm trying to think of, like, has there been any game this tournament where a team has really tried to jump them early?
No.
Yeah. So maybe they won't be prepared for it. I mean, I just have to imagine that it's on Hayes' mind. I mean, this entire plan of hers has been to prevent counterattacks and to prevent fast transitions. So
yeah,
I don't know if I'm quite as confident as you are, but whatever confidence I have is that I haven't seen Brazil do this twice yet.
That is what I'm getting at, which is to say, yeah, Brazil has not shown the consistency to handle this. They've frankly been outplayed in a number of games. The U.S. is at least the second best team they will have played. They did beat the best team they played today. The U.S. on current form is a very good team. And it's an individual game, so you can throw out some of that stuff. But if you ask me to place a bet, I think I'd be very hard-pressed to place it on anybody but the U.S. I think the U.S. are heavy favorites.
I don't see Brazil with the same level of organization trying to pack defenders in deep. So if any of the forwards can get a little bit of space, I think it's going to be difficult for Brazil to operate. But then again, it'll be 3v3 again because they're going to play with three center backs. So, yeah, I don't know. Because of the way that Brazil played today, my mind is quite open about how the gold medal game is going to go. And by the way, I wouldn't be all that bothered if the U.S. lost, frankly, because again, this is a freebie. It's free money. You're about to get at worst a silver medal. That's amazing, given that gold medal.
Yeah, you've medaled.
And also like the gold medal game will be Emma Hayes' 10th game, and it would be nice to see Marta win something. Quite honestly, you know.
Yeah, I think that's. I think the U.S. wins this game 2-3-0.
Okay.
Maybe 2-3-1. I have yet to see the Brazilian backline really hold a team in check.
Yeah.
And the Brazilian midfield hold a team in check. Do they have the weapons going forward to really hurt the U.S.? Yeah, absolutely. They're a very good team. Moreover, I think a difference here, the U.S. is just a lot more familiar with a lot of Brazil's best players because they've seen them in the NWSL.
And they play them a lot at the international level, too.
There's just a familiarity that Spain maybe didn't have.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Other than, that the U.S. over the years really does have, both club side and not.
Yeah.
Something that I know was brought up on the Discord today, and a good place for me to end this, we are ending up with a really NWSL heavy final.
I know. It's true.
Like really NWSL heavy.
Yeah. Final. I mean, that's the natural byproduct of the U.S. and Brazil being in the final because Brazil, I believe, is the most represented non-American nation in the NWSL.
I think that is correct. Are we about to put to bed the NWSL is crap and Americans need to go play in Europe to really learn?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think also like there's a little bit of back and forth going on in the Discord right now about like the viability of Spain as a going concern. My personal feeling is that Spain and the U.S. and I'd throw England in there are all basically at the same level. They just play. They have different stylistic and tactical approaches, and they have players with different technical abilities. And I think that is actually quite useful for players to learn in a wide variety of contexts. If I advocate for more Spanish players coming to the NWSL, it's just that they can learn how to handle a really physical kind of environment, which they didn't do very well with today against Brazil. But similarly, I would say to American players, like go and learn how to play one-touch football and learn how to try and string a 20-pass sequence together. I think that is valuable too. I think they both can be useful and will help you grow as a player. I think I'm a little bit over trying to say one league or one system is better than the other. Like,
yeah, I'm in the same place as you. I'm not that interested in the discourse. I think the only thing that will cause a real seismic shift in this conversation has nothing to do with a U.S.-Brazil final in Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
It is if NWSL teams show the collective ambition that we've seen from a fair number of teams in this league and start paying higher wages than other places in the world and become like the NBA or the WNBA, the league you need to be playing in, that's the thing that will turn it.
I mean,
it'll follow the money.
Off season has indicated anything. It's that maybe we're there now.
Yeah, no, it's
that there aren't that many teams in Europe that can match the salary offers coming out of the NWSL.
But also,
so we'll see.
Yeah, the NWSL is its own beast. We've seen some slow transitions from players who've come over from Europe to adapt to the league. We've seen some other maybe less heralded players like Felipe transition quite nicely into the league. The NWSL is a unique league. Spain and England also have a unique set of circumstances in which their club players play. Everything steady as you go, this game means nothing as far as that's concerned.
like Spain, US are the two best international sides in the world. I don't think there's really any debate about that. I don't think today's demolition of Spain by Brazil changes that either.
I don't think
they are the two best teams in the world.
I don't think if Germany had beat the US today, we would feel that differently about this.
No.
Those are the two best teams. All right. Well, we have gone far, far enough. Evan, we're going to do a live stream, correct, for the final?
On Saturday, yes. So the kickoff is at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. We will go live at 10:45 a.m. Eastern, 7:45 a.m. Pacific.
So much more reasonable.
I know. And that will be available for all of our paid Patreon subscribers. So if you are not yet a member of the Patreon community, please go to patreon.com/xowngoals. That's the letter xowngoals. And sign up today. It's only $6 a month. And if you are a paid subscriber and you know someone who you think would be interested in our show and everything that we're doing over in the Patreon space, please let them know and share all the information to have them join. We would love to have all of you. But until then, enjoy your week. Enjoy the bronze medal game on Friday. We will be back with you for the live watch-along for our Patreon members on Saturday morning. And this episode recapping the medal games will be going up on Sunday.
Bye.